So we start hour number three. I'm Jim Rome, live from the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. So I've got this thing going right now whereby I see lots and lots and lots of tweets, like tweet decks filled up. I see lots of tweets. I just don't really like any of them. I'm looking at my call screen. I see lots and lots and lots of calls. Don't really care for them either. You know what I'm saying? Like, my thing is, I'm not wholly reliant upon these things. I badly want you to be involved. I want this thing to be interactive, but I'm not totally dependent on your calls or your tweets or your emails. Like, I never run out of things to say. I have takes for days. It's not like I'm forced to read these things. Like, these Albert Bell tweets that keep coming, don't need them. Nor am I going to read them. Same thing with the telephone calls. I've got a phone line open right now. If you're good, you jump the line. But if you're on hold and I haven't taken your phone call yet, pretty good chance I'm not going to either. 1-800-636-8686. If you're joining us late, we started the program and I laid out my thoughts about Loyola of Chicago, that they're an amazing story, that they did not fluke their way to the Final Four, because you cannot fluke your way to the Final Four. I love these guys. I love the way they go about it. I love their story. It's one of the greatest stories already ever. If they beat Michigan and they go on to win a national championship, it is officially the best story in the history of the world. And they're good enough. Like, I look at the remaining four teams, I could make an argument for any of the four. I could make a good argument that any of the four remaining teams can still win this thing. Honestly, I could. If you were to say to me, pick a team, argue for that team, I can. So while Loyola is getting all the headlines right now, and rightfully so, no one is surprised that the other three are headed to San Antonio. And again, I can make an argument for any one of them right now. In fact, from a storyline standpoint, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better Final Four. You've got the Cinderella with the 98-year-old nun who has captured the country's hearts. You've got John Beilein and Michigan making a return to the Final Four after they beat Florida State Saturday night. And if you didn't know before, you better recognize it right now. John Beilein is a good coach. A damn good coach. I mean, how good? He took a team that was beaten by Nebraska by 20 in January, and he's got them in the Final Four in March. A guy whose team lost to Northwestern the first week of February to drop to 8-5 and fall to fifth place in the Big Ten, and they have not lost since. And they can beat you any number of ways. That's a very good team. Do not expect Beilein to admit how good he is, but that's a really good team. But you can't expect him to admit that he is approaching this trip differently from his last one. He's going to enjoy this one more, and he's going to have more fun than he did in 2013. And you can see that it's showing up in his players as well. Then on the other half of the bracket, you've got a certified blue blood in Kansas advancing with an overtime win over Duke. You've got a new blue blood in Villanova making their third trip to the Final Four in a decade, looking for their second national title in 3 years. And yes, Kansas did dodge a scud when Grayson Allen's last second shot in regulation rimmed out. If that goes down, Allen is a legend and Duke rolls on. Instead, it was Twitter lapping up the Duke tears and celebrating the end of Allen's run. I'm not sure I've ever seen Twitter as happy about anything as they were that shot didn't go down and that he got knocked out. But do not let your hatred of Duke and Duke fans blind you to what Kansas has done. Because the truth of this is, on paper, this is not one of Bill Self's best teams. But as Dennis Dodd said when he came on in hour number one in studio, this is probably Bill Self's best coaching job ever. This is a Kansas team that lost three times at home this year. Significant because coming into this year, they had lost only 10 times at home in the last 15 years. This is a team that Self himself described back in December as, quote, the softest team that Kansas has had since I've been here, end quote. This is a team that many thought would break the conference title streak, but they didn't. And they're not soft. And they're back in the Final Four. And then they meet Villanova. Villanova has been the most impressive team through the first four games in the tournament. Jay Wright's team, was the most efficient offense in the country during the season, and that continued in the first three games of the tournament. Then they ran into Texas Tech, and the Raiders jumped on them early, got out to a 9-1 lead, hassled them, and hounded them into Nova's worst offensive game of the tournament. And they still win by double digits. You know how good a team you have to be to crack a team as good as Texas Tech while shooting 33% from the field and only 4 of 24 from beyond the arc. I mean, Villanova could not have shot it any worse, and it didn't matter at all. That's the kind of night that would have gotten Nova beaten a few years back, but they're not that same team. Not when they D up the way they do, not when they go to the glass the way they do, and especially the offensive glass. Man, they're tough, too. It's a much tougher Villanova team than I've seen years past. Then again, what are they? They're a reflection of their coach. They're like their coach. Swaggy as hell, tough as hell, and they never, ever rattle. Jalen Brunson won't let them. Not only your potential player of the year, but as good a floor general as you are ever going to see. A guy who always has the ball in his hand and never makes a bad decision. So to me, Villanova, on paper, they're the best team of the remaining four. They shoot the hell out of it, and even when their shots aren't falling, they're dangerous as anybody because of the defense they play and because of their toughness. But, if the tournament has taught us anything at all, this more than any other year, anything is possible. So again, if I were asked to, I can make an argument for any of the remaining four to cut down the nets on Monday night. But to me, I'm just going to worry about Saturday. I'm already counting down the hours until Saturday. Loyola of Chicago versus Michigan, Kansas and Villanova. You couldn't ask for anything more. Let's do this. Who you got? Who do you have and why? What do you like here? Who are you taking? And can Loyola of Chicago extend this thing to Monday night? And if so, can they win the whole thing? I mean, I've been thinking about this all weekend. If they were to win a national championship, I don't even know what to compare it to. I don't think there is anything. And 11 in the Final Four. It's happened three other times, but this 11 isn't even like the other 11s. It's more impressive. Have we taken a phone call yet today, guys? Let me think. I don't think. Why ruin a perfect thing, or at least a very good thing, with a very bad phone call? Do I risk it? It is smack off season. It is the spring. I've got to get people eligible for the smack off. I've got a stack of golden tickets. They're right here. I'd love to give away one. I'd rather take away one, but I'd love to give away one. That's the sound of somebody ripping a golden ticket for the all-important summer smack off. This is the sound of somebody having a golden ticket and getting it ripped from them. Golden ticket?
Because I've got a golden ticket.
Golden ticket? Getting ripped. The beautiful sound. It's a great sound, isn't it? Looking at my call options. Let's see. Why not go to Bonanza, Oregon? It's not a bad spot. Why not go to Bonanza, Oregon? After I check out this tweet. At Johnny Scabs tweets, best tourney ever. No Duke, no Hurleys, Cinderella and Michigan go blue. Wore long and steep ramps in San Antonio. See, I don't agree with that. The Hurleys make the tournament a hell of a lot better. I'll say it for the record. I've got huge respect for the Hurley family. I think they make the tournament better. By the way, I've got huge respect for Duke. I'm not here to hate. I'm not here to hate anything, much less excellence. Remember that. I'm not here to hate. I'm not here to hate anything, much less excellence. Duke is symbolic of that. Yeah, Rome, I know why. I know why. It's because Coach K comes on the program. That's not why. I want to be very clear about that. My takes and opinions are never, ever, ever based on who will and will not come on this program. The reason for that, if everybody wants to do this show, I'm not doing my job. Reason number two, something else I've learned about this business. There are guys that would never do the show that always come on the show. There are guys who used to always come on the show that will never do the show. It all comes around. So I would never, ever think like that, number one. And number two, who's to say that a guy who comes on the show always, always will? Who's to say a guy that never comes on the show won't? I've done this a long time. It all comes around. It all comes around. Inevitably, people who love me will come to hate me, and people who hate me will come to love me. It all comes around. And if everybody wants to do the show, I'm not doing my job. So, no. I've got a lot of respect for Duke. I've got a lot of respect for Coach K. I've got a lot of respect for the Hurley family and the, quote, dignity of work. Yeah, Rome, what about Christian Laettner? Yeah, what about him? Pretty fascinating guy. Different dude now. Different dude. Do you hate that guy too? Did you forget about him? Do you hate all things Duke? Do you hate J.J. Redick? Do you hate all things Duke? Well, they're out. I mean, very clearly, people are much, much happier that Duke lost than that Kansas won. You get that feeling? But then again, one more thing. One more thing before I go to break. Don't have your entire worldview skewed by Twitter. I'd love to know how many people there are in the world, and then I'd love to know how many users there are on Twitter. If you spend as much time with your face in your phone and you look at nothing other than Twitter, you think that's the way the entire world thinks, when really it's not. It's not. Understand that. All right, still ahead. My thoughts on Odell Beckham. Now what? Who's going to blink first? Beckham or the Giants? Or is it really not even that big of a thing? You've got the Giants saying, hey, listen, nobody's untouchable. The Giants are funny. They're kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth. We're not looking to trade this guy. He's not on the trade block, but nobody's untouchable. And then Ian Rappaport reported that Odell Beckham is not going to take the field until he gets a new deal. And in terms of a new deal, we know he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL. We also know that wide receivers are not the highest paid player in the NFL. So who's going to blink first? And is it as bad as all that? I would argue not in March, it's not. So Giants fans, what do you think? You've seen what that team looks like without Beckham. You know how fed up the Giants are as an organization with Beckham and some of the decisions he makes. What's going to happen? That's coming up. And I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll guarantee a phone call. I'll break my own streak. I will guarantee a phone call next segment. Also, we are going to tape an interview with Draymond Green for this week's podcast. That should be interesting, as always. Make note of that. Podcast will drop tomorrow, Podcast Tuesday. But first, a timeout, your telephone calls, and my thoughts on Odell Beckham Jr. when we come back.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Talk about backing yourself into a corner. How about me guaranteeing a phone call this segment? The second that came out of my mouth, I regretted that. But I'll do it. Warner, the official ladder of NCAA March Madness, is bringing you this segment. March means it is ladder madness. Go to GetWarner.com. Find the best Warner products for you. That's GetWarner.com. All right, so in terms of Odell Beckham, let me set this take up with the following quote from John Mara. Owner of the team, he said this about OBJ3, quote, I'm tired of answering questions about Odell's behavior and what the latest incident is. I think he knows what we expect of him, and now it's up to him, end quote. Pretty strong statement. Pretty strong statement. Generally, you've got a franchise player like that, one of the most electric players in the NFL. Normally, the owner or the coach will deflect something like that. That's the owner saying point blank, we're tired of it. All right, we're tired of answering these questions. We're tired of answering questions, not about a contract. We're tired of answering questions about his behavior. So that's John Mara. Meanwhile, Ian Rappaport reports that he's not going to set foot, Odell. He's not going to set foot on the field without a new contract extension. He tweets at Rapsheet from at GMFB. My understanding is that Giants wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. will not set foot on a field without a new contract extension agreed to with the Giants or any team. This comes a day after owner John Mara said that nobody is untouchable in trade talks. quote unquote. All right, so Beckham, despite all of his issues which Mara is tired of talking about, does in fact have some leverage. He's got some leverage. Maybe not as much as he thinks, but he's got some leverage, and he's obviously trying to use it. So when you look at, and what's the leverage? When you look at that offense without him versus that offense with him, when you look at Eli Manning without him versus Eli Manning with him, I mean, it's pretty astonishing. And on top of that, it's not like it's a great receiver or a great draft for receivers. It's not like they've got a ready replacement for Odell Beckham. So he might even be betting on the fact that the Giants completely butchered the PR with Eli Manning last season and might not want to go there again, which is pretty rich, right? Given what his PR has been like. However, maybe he thinks he's got the hammer. Maybe he's trying to swing that hammer. Maybe he knows, man, we were a garbage football team when I'm not on the field. Who are they going to get? Who are they going to draft? What are they going to do? This guy might be just betting on that he's got some leverage. You know, and maybe when he says that not only does he want a new contract, but he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL, he might be begging in that regard. But there's got to be a part of Beckham who's thinking, what the hell? I'll take the shot. Why not? I'll take the shot. I've got some leverage. We'll see how it goes. So, how does that play out? Are the Giants fed up with this guy? Yes. I mean, they're fed up with the act. They're fed up with having to answer questions about the act. But are they so fed up that they'd be willing to trade that guy? Or are they simply posturing? And if they really are willing to trade him, and that's a big if, and again, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying, no, he's not on the trade block, but nobody's untouchable. Save for a matter of fact that they really do want to move him. Can you ever get fair trade value for a guy like that? And even if you can get fair trade value, and I don't think you can, but even if you can, or even if you get anywhere near that, who is going to trade for this guy knowing that he wants to be, not only get a new deal, but be the highest paid player in the NFL? So you have to get fair trade value, and you've got to find a team that's willing to make him the highest paid player in the NFL or close to it. So who's that team out there willing to do that? And are they willing to trade him? And it's March. In other words, there's a lot going on between now and then. And is Beckham willing to sit out any extended period of time to get what he wants? You know, the irony here, of course, is guys like that know that in order to get what they want, they have to sit out. But what do they want? They want more money. So are they willing to get no money in order to get what they want when it may not work? I find that hard to believe, too. I said the same thing about Le'Veon Bell. Maybe a game. Maybe two games. But then again, if there might be a guy willing to sit out for an extended period of time, it might be this guy. Fact of the matter is, the Giants have his option for this year. They've got the right to tag him for the next 2 years. The Giants don't have to do anything. So unless the Giants are completely blown away by some offer, they don't need to do anything. And I don't think they will. So Beckham reportedly is saying that he's not taking the field without a new deal, because that's the only way to get a new deal. The Giants don't have to do anything at all. And it's going to take a crazy, crazy deal to make a trade with him, for him. So my feeling is he's got some leverage. They've got more. He's not going anywhere. I don't see it happening. He's a pain in the ass to them, but not enough that they're going to trade him and not get what they want. And I don't see how they do. Because, again, you're going to have to give up a ton to get him and then give up a ton to keep him. And I don't think that sets up well for him. Giants fan, what do you want to see happen here? Should they move him? Can they get anywhere near fair value for him? And is there somebody else out there who's willing to make him the highest paid player? Not receiver, but the highest paid player in the NFL. Hey, and by the way, the guy's coming off a really significant injury. The Giants have to factor that in, too. At PJC tweets, why pay this so-called Hall of Fame wide receiver big bucks when all he is an average, injury-prone prima donna? Dude, I've never seen anybody butcher the spelling of prima donna quite like that. Pre, P-R-E, Madonna, M-A-D-O-N-N-A. The Material Girl, Madonna. Hey, New York, I've never called you out, and it's not your fault. That's the one you want to put up. As funny as that is to read, it's even funnier to look at. Yeah, I don't want to drop my educational background on you or crack on you for spelling because, honestly, texting makes us all lazy in terms of grammar and spelling. But you cannot spell prima donna P-R-E-M-A-D-O-N-N-A. You just can't. And don't blame that on autocorrect either. No, you did not, dude. Stop doing that. An injury-prone pre-Madonna. Anyway, he's banged up. He is prone to injury. This guy's not an average receiver. There's nothing average about him at all. There's nothing remotely average about this guy. He is an electric talent, an electric personality. This is a guy with Hall of Fame ability. But wide receivers are not going to be the highest paid player in the NFL. Hey, you're worth whatever anybody will pay you. I don't see anybody paying him that amount of money. Well, I did promise that I would take a telephone call this segment. Let's do it. Let's go to Lawrence, Kansas. Diana, War Lady Clones.
War Lady
Diana,
Clones.
What's up? How are you?
Hi, I'm good and good. And how are you doing, Jim?
So good, Diana. Everything's great on this end.
Yes, I know. I was just so thrilled that KU got into the Final Four yesterday, but I want to especially thank you for saying that everyone there deserves to be there. I have been watching Loyola. I watched lots and lots of college basketball, not just KU. And in this tournament, they have been running plays and surprising all the teams because they're doing things that nobody has done to them before.
Diana, yeah. I could not agree with you more. I'm so glad you made the phone call. And that's what I like, an old-school straight take. Diana, yeah. well done. Thank you for joining us. An old-school straight basketball take. Not some imbecile with an imbecilic tweet. Some crazy misspelling. That's what I like. Getting us back to our roots, right? Old-school Diana. They all deserve it. And Loyola is such an amazing story. I mean, let's be honest. Look at Michigan. Look at the bankroll. Look at their facilities. Look at the money. And John Beilein's did an amazing job. Again, we are talking about a team that about 45 days ago was fifth in the Big Ten, a team that had lost to Northwestern, got hammered by Nebraska by 20 at Nebraska, and he's got them back in the Final Four. Hell of a coach. They deserve to be there. Villanova, great team, great coach. They're looking to win it all for the second time in 3 years. They deserve to be there. Kansas, the bluest of the blue chips. Bill Self doing as good a job as he has ever done. They beat Duke when I thought Duke was the best team remaining on paper. They deserve to be there. But don't you take anything away from Loyola. There's no fluke here. They didn't luck their way there. They beat three higher seeds in succession, at the buzzer, and then they didn't just beat Kansas State, they beat them down. They dominated that game. They bludgeoned them. They all deserve to be there. And whatever you do, don't you dare. Don't you even think about coming for Diana. Don't you think about coming for Diana for calling this show and saying, Jim, I agree, all four of those teams belong there. Because her take is better than 100% of your takes that I've seen this morning. Just like Marie's was, just like Winona's was, and just like Mitzi's was. War Lady Clones, even the ones that are over the age of 30.
Okay.
Stucknut's in. Hey, Steve, let me ask you something, brother. You're the best.
Brother.
You ever ask yourself if maybe you'd be better just archiving the show rather than participating? Yeah, I'm just being funny, Steve-O. You're my guy. Let's see what he has to say. Pre-Debbie Gibson didn't want any of that? No, I take back what I said, Steve. You think you might be better off just being the show historian?
Whoa.
Why do you gotta come for Debbie Gibson like that? Debbie Gibson was awesome. Man, the denim, her playing at malls. I used to run around the San Fernando Valley looking for her. Hey, let's go to the Fallbrook Mall, see if Debbie Gibson's there. Let's go to the Topanga Mall, see if Debbie Gibson's there. Let's go to the Fallbrook Mall where my show was and see who we can find. Man, war dropping your albums and performing at the mall. That's awesome. Do you respect me? Do you respect the time I put in? Do you respect the XR4TI? Do you respect the time they put in? Then why are you trying to wreck my show? I got you, Diana. Good job. Good effort, Diana. Hey, Alvy, rack her. Don't you clones jerk with me. I'll put her in the smack off. I'll put her in the smack off so fast it'll make your head spin. Rack her! The ladies always make the show better. They're smarter. Their takes are better. What are you going to do? All right, we'll take a short time out. Really short. And by that, I mean I wish I had more time off this segment, but I don't. I'll be right back to finish this thing like a boss. Draymond Green is going to be on our podcast. And I bring that up because we'll probably tape that later today. And it's going to be really interesting with Golden State. They are banged up right now. They're hoping to get healthy. And not only get healthy, but get close to 100%. Because it's one thing to come back in time for the postseason. It's another to come back in time and be right physically. And get your timing and rhythm back. So we'll get into all that with him. And his background is pretty amazing. That's coming up a little bit later on today. But first, here is that sports update that I promised you. Anchored by Sir Rich. ATP. Time to answer your question. The Ask the Pros question, where you submit a question and then I read it. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Garrett and Pomona, Jim, do you remember the moment that triggered your love for sports talk radio that made you want to start the successful career you have? 100%. Absolutely. I had this amazing epiphany. An amazing epiphany. Like, it was incredible. Yeah, the second I realized I wasn't going to play pro sports, like when I was 11 or 9 or whatever it was, that's when I wanted to be a talk show host, when I realized I couldn't play. Brenton PC tweets or asks, we know you love horses. Do you know how to ride? Have you ever been atop of a racehorse? That's actually pretty interesting. Do I know how to ride? You know, kind of, sort of, not really. It's kind of a weird deal. Without belaboring this point, when I grew up in Los Angeles, I grew up in the suburbs of Los Angeles, and I lived in a neighborhood where people had horses. It's very unusual. In like the San Fernando Valley. And so my dad had a horse. My mom had a horse. My sister had a horse. And they said to me, you want a horse? I'm like, no, why the hell would I want a horse? No, I'll have a dog, but I don't want a horse. So I never had any interest in horses at all. Never had any interest in horses. Literally had horses on our property and never spent any time with them. But the old man made me muck out the stalls. It's part of my allowance. I had to clean up horse crap. So I never rode the horse, but every week I had to clean up after the horses. And for that, back in the day, I think he paid me $7 a week. And the good news is, not just horse crap, but dog crap too. So I earned that money. I earned that seven bones. So one day, for some reason, talk about an epiphany. My old man says to me one day out of the blue, hey, listen, I've given this some thought, you know? And since you don't ride the horses and have no interest in the horses, if you don't want, you don't have to clean up after the horses anymore. I'm like, hell yeah. No, I don't want. Good, I'm done with that. So, I've been on a horse. I've ridden horses, but no, never a racehorse. They don't just let you on racehorses. Racehorses are very aggressive. They're racehorses. I learned my lesson the hard way. When I first got into the business, I would go visit the horses. And for whatever reason, when I had the horses as a kid, I had no interest. But then as an adult, when we bought into our first racehorse and that horse won that race, I started to hang around the track and the backside and the stalls. And then I fell in love with racehorses. So, but I didn't know that much about racehorses. And to be honest, I didn't know that much about the sport itself. So I'd be coming around, hanging out, like, oh, there's my guy. Hey, what's up? And after I got bitten a few times by the racehorses, I learned my lesson. And it was Billy Koch from Little Red Feather who got me into the game. And that's Billy Koch. And after a horse took a chunk out of me one day in the stall, because I was just visiting, he's like, bro, they're not pets. They are not pets. That's not like your dog or your cat. Man, they're racehorses. They're bred to run. They're bred to compete. They're aggressive. Some are and some aren't. I mean, some are docile. Some are really nice. Some are sweet. And some will take a chunk out of you. Like Shared Belief. The day that I met Shared Belief, when we bought Shared Belief won a race in Northern California, shipped down to Southern California, so I couldn't wait to meet this horse. You know, beautiful little gelding. Key point here, little gelding, not a big horse, non-threatening. Went to the stall to meet him, took a chunk out of my arm. I've got the scar to prove it. And the trainers were looking at me like, wow, man, at Rome, he's not that bright, not that smart. I'm like, look at that horse, man. It's a sweet little horse. Sweet little gelding. I never made that mistake again. Misdirection. The horse that was a two-time Breeders' Cup champ. Meaner than any colt that we've ever had. Colts are boys. Phillies mares are females. She was mean. So to answer your question, no, they don't let people like us get on racehorses. You can't just show up and say, hey, I own that horse. Can I go for a few laps around the track? No, you don't do that. So, Brent, never been on the back of a racehorse. Meantime, there have been, let's see, do I have time for one last take? I'm going to say, sort of. Why not? Let's give it a shot. So, I was checking out this fight over the weekend, and there have been some pretty iconic, disrespectful, straight-up, savage moments in sports. I'm thinking AI stepping over Ty Lue, the beard, soul-snatching Wes Johnson, Joey Bats flipping the hickory stick into orbit after crushing a jack job in the 2015 ALDS. Each of those moments dripping with equal parts swag, equal parts disrespect. But none of those moments are in the same zip code. Hell, maybe even the same planet as what went down at Legacy Fighting Alliance 36. Now, if you're not familiar with the LFA, it's an MMA promotion that's been putting on fights for over a year now. On Saturday night, there was a fight between Drew Chatman and Irvin Ayala. It will be remembered forever as the day that sportsmanship may have died the most heinous death ever. Halfway through the first round, and if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you'll see the video. Halfway through the first round, the most bizarre sequence in recent memory played out in real time. Irvin Ayala lands a right kick that drops Chatman to his back. But on the way down, with a hammer fist, Ayala bangs his face right into the knee of Chatman and pretty much knocks himself out. Now, that alone would have been a wild turn of events in and of itself. Ayala went from a leg sweep to a hammer fist to a sleep in about 1 second. But it's what happened next that has everybody's gap on the floor. Because after Chatman got out from under Ayala, who again was knocked out on his stomach, Chatman jumps on Ayala's back and front flips right off of him. You heard me. Chatman got on his opponent's lifeless back, stood on him, jumped up on him, and used it as a diving board. I've never seen anything like that in my life. This dude's out cold, face first in the canvas, and this guy jumps on him and uses it to propel himself into a front flip. This guy's out cold, face down, after a freak self-inflicted knockout, and Chapman's going all Greg Louganis off his back. Gotta say, nothing really swaggy about that. That's not AI or the beard or Joey Bats. I mean, that's straight up Mount Bagmore stuff right there. One of the most disrespectful things I've ever seen in sports. I mean, what? You didn't want a can ball off the guy? Corkscrew off the guy? I mean, don't divers get a few attempts to improve their scores? Front flipping off of a dude who, I mean, not go like half gainer. Front flipping off a dude who's cold on his stomach is right on par with like graveyard urination. It's tasteless, man. It's bad. Bad form. And in that moment, my man seemed pretty proud of himself too. Because not only did he score a fluke win after Ayala pretty much knocked himself out, and not only did he use Ayala's spine as a high dive or trampoline, but he actually looked over at his crew and flashed this giant, did you see that kind of smile. You see me? Front flip off a dude who's asleep. And I nailed the landing. Did you see that? I mean, well played, my man. Because the front flip off Ayala's back got you instantly DQ'd. Disqualified because, get this, there are actually rules about standing on a guy's back who's knocked out. Who knew? You can't do that? Since when? You're not allowed to stand on a guy's back when he's out cold face first. Not only did it cost him a fight that he had just won, he has now been suspended 90 days, and his pay is being withheld. As always, hope it was worth it. What a memorable professional debut. Just like Chapman drew it up, I'm sure. Now, for what it's worth, he did apologize. And he does seem kind of beat up over it. Quote, I don't deserve to get paid for that. My mother has to see that. That video is priceless. I'll give you that, bro. It is that. That video is priceless. Actually, it's not priceless. There's a price on that. You lost the fight. You're suspended for 90 days. You do the math. Quote, I have to look back at that and live with regret every single day. End quote. He sounds sorry. I'd be sorry, too. If there was a video of me going gymnastics, like off the balance beam, off a dude who might have been dead for all I knew, I'd be pretty sorry. And I'd be even more sorry if that video was already viewed more than 1.5 million times and counting. Making the whole thing worse and almost unbelievable is that Chapman's nickname is, wait for this, 1 second longer. His nickname, The Honorable. Like, you can't make that stuff up. Call me insane, but I don't think anybody will gloss the most dishonorable dude, maybe in MMA history, The Honorable anymore. You kind of lose that title the second you treat your opponent's lifeless back as a trampoline. Again, this dude was face first, on the mat, out cold, and for all we knew, dead. Good news, though. Now we all know your name, your real name. Too bad it's for front flipping off a guy that had knocked himself out. Hey, I understand that whole heat of the moment thing, I really do. Man, you can't do front flips off a guy who's face first on the canvas. If you want to do a front flip after this guy knocks himself out, you go right ahead and do that. But not off his back. That's not cool. Huge call brought to you by Werner, the official ladder of NCAA March Madness. March means it is ladder madness. Go to getwerner.com and find the best Werner products for you. That's getwerner.com. If I didn't get to your phone call, sorry about it. See you tomorrow. We're out.